Hello, it's Friday, 11th of June. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson. On today's show, Gary Bowerman of Check In Asia and I are delighted to welcome David Lukens, travel journalist and creator of the Thai Island Times. So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So today, we're excited to be talking to David Lukens, Bangkok-based travel journalist and creator of the excellent Thai Island Times newsletter, which is one of the regulars that both Hannah and I read throughout the week. So, David, thanks very much for coming on to the show. How are you today, and where are you?
I am well. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I'm in here in Bangkok.
And Bangkok today, how are you going? Is it hot and humid, stuffy? Is it sunny? What's happening there?
Yeah, the hot season's been lasting longer than it used to here. The seasons kind of have been all haywire the last 5 to 10 years. So it's hot, yeah. We're waiting for the rain.
Waiting for the rain. So we got plenty to pack in over the next 30, 35 minutes. So let's get started. But let's take a little bit of a look back, David, at your history. You were born and educated in the US, but you studied Asian studies and civilizations for your degree. How did you develop this fascination with Asia? And how did that transfer to Thailand in particular?
Well, to make a long story short, I in Burlington, Vermont, up in the northeast US near Canada, I worked in several Thai restaurants starting in my early 20s, and I made some close friendships with Thai people, also like some Vietnamese people and people that I worked with there. And in 2005, I came to Southeast Asia, to Thailand for the first time, and just kind of fell in love with it, was hooked. I came with Thai friends that were living in the US, and, you know, we spent time at their families' homes, and you know, I got really kind of an inside look into the country, and we, you know, drank whiskey with their families, and, you know, had great food, and it was just kind of a life-changing trip. And after that, I started traveling here regularly. I actually spent a few months in Vietnam at one point too. Finally, I went back to school, and then I moved here permanently in 2011 and started working for Travelfish straight out of the gate. And they were actually the ones who kind of got me going in the direction of all the islands. But my first commission for them was covering a bunch of the lower Andaman Sea islands from Kalmuk down to Kalipe back in like late 2011. That was kind of when I really started to develop an interest in the island specifically. I worked for Travelfish as a full-time staff writer for more than 7 years and just covered a lot of the islands, actually covered a lot of the country for them, the whole northeast and central regions and most of the south. So that's kind of what got me to where I am now.
So let's talk about the Thai Island Times, which is your excellent Substack newsletter that Gary mentioned earlier. You started that about a year ago, I think. So what was your initial objective in terms of content and the audience? And has that changed since?
It's sort of been a work in progress, but I started it in April 2020, which was, during Thailand's first wave of COVID, which wasn't particularly bad compared to what we're going through now, more recently. But the lockdown measures and everything were a lot stricter then. There was a curfew and a ban on alcohol sales and that kind of thing. I actually lost a bunch of freelance clients at the time and just kind of had some time to spare. And so I had this idea and I just decided to kind of go all in with it. And there are two objectives really behind it. The first one is, I kind of felt like, I had been covering these islands for several years, and I kind of felt like a lot of the travel media coverage of them was a bit shallow and superficial. I mean, not all of it. There's certainly a lot of really good content on the islands being written too, but overall, I felt like I wanted to go kind of deeper into them and show that, you know, these are real communities, with fascinating backgrounds and cultures, and, you know, also a lot of challenges, especially environmentally. And they're not just like tourist attractions or whatever. That's sort of the main focus of it. But then I also wanted to show, all these islands and also coastal areas. I cover mainland coastal areas also, just sort of how they're coping with the pandemic and, you know, share that information with outside Thailand. And that's how I kind of ended up getting into covering you know, things like tourism reopening and the just the ongoing COVID situation, because it's all kind of related.
That segues nicely into our next question, David, because like ourselves, like Hannah and I, and your newsletter, you know, COVID has become the dominant theme, tourism reboot, tourism reopening. It's the subject on everybody's lips, particularly in Thailand right now. But across the past year, you sort of chronicled the various proposals by the Tourism Authority of Thailand and the Thai government to get tourism back up and running. Looking back over that period, you know, what are your impressions of the process and how has it played out within Thailand?
Tedious, I'd say, is the best word to describe it. Frustrating. I mean, the Thai government really has a well-earned reputation for officials kind of contradicting one another and flip-flopping and just miscommunication, and, you know, things get announced but they're not official, and then, you know, they get backtracked, and so it can be frustrating covering it. At this point, I don't even remember all of the different ideas and plans that were announced back last year. There were different travel bubble ideas that never went anywhere and things like that, but I mean, I think it's also important to kind of keep the big picture in mind that, you know, these officials, they've got their hands full too. I mean, you know, no one's in an easy situation. It's really difficult. And when you really start covering all these tourism reopening plans and stuff, it can get so frustrating that you kind of want to blame these officials. And I think it's important to keep in mind that there is a good cause that we're going through all this. And I mean, 3.75 million people have died in this pandemic. It's important to keep them in mind too. And I think it's the same in every country. It's, you know, there a lot of times there's no easy answers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Gary and I both feel the same, having covered lots of different reopening plans on this podcast over the last year. I think one of the iconic, I suppose, moves that was meant to be a game changer last year for Thailand was this opening of the special tourist visa. And I think everybody kind of remembers those images of this plane load of Chinese visitors arriving at Bangkok last October. And, you know, everybody kind of suited up in PPE. The media is taking pictures of every move. It was kind of there's this sense of desperation, I think, felt around that time. Was it? Is that how you read it?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, there was definitely a sense of desperation. I think it really kind of showed how the state of how things are, and just like, that's how things are going to be. I mean, in that sense, it was kind of worrying, you know, just to show how far we are, you know, we were away from, you know, normalcy. But I mean, I think I also kind of saw it as a positive sign at the time. I think I kind of saw it in a similar way as I looked at when they first started allowing foreign residents of Thailand back in, you know, because Thailand went several months where they only allowed citizens back into the country, and they pretty much shut down almost all inbound air travel. You know, I think it was in July when they first started allowing foreign residents with work permits back in. So, you know, I saw that as a good sign. And then when they started the special tourist visa, I mean, it was a small step. I kind of look at it like, if you've ever like crossed a river where you jump from one rock to the next, and you know, it was one of those little rocks. I mean, sometimes you slip and you fall in and you have to go back to the beginning. But I mean, that's kind of my analogy of how this whole pandemic has gone in terms of reopening tourism. It's sometimes it's one step forward, two steps back, but you know, I think I take whatever hope I can get. And you know, I mean, the special tourist visa was, you know, it was a step along the way.
Yeah. And as you mentioned there, you know, we were a long way from any kind of normalcy at that time. Looking back with hindsight is always much easier, but that was the pre-vaccinated era. You know, around that time, probably a month later, Hong Kong and Singapore were trying to get their air travel bubble up and running. But again, that was in the pre-vaccinated era. I guess that had a lot to do with it. But I mean, from a Thailand perspective, you know, what went wrong with the special tourist visa? Was it the scheme itself or was it just the timing?
I think anytime you have 14-day quarantine at the tourist expense, you're going to get very few people willing to take advantage of a plan like that. I mean, you know, that was really the main obstacle with drawing many tourists from it. I mean, it did have some other flaws, like I think you had to show hotel bookings for the entire duration of the stay in Thailand, which, you know, the special tourist visa, I think was good for like 6 months. I mean, you know, I thought that was really unnecessary to make people show hotel bookings for, you know, in order to take advantage of the program. But really, you know, with the quarantine in place, I mean, I do know a couple of people who took advantage of it, but they're pretty much people who, you know, had, you know, vested interests in Thailand and really wanted to come back.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was, you really had to want it, right? It's not just, I fancy going there for a quick holiday. No, 14-day quarantine, you're never going to be able to do that.
Yeah, and it is expensive too, the quarantine. I mean, it's minimum, the 14-day quarantine in the ASQ hotels, I think minimum like 32,000 baht, which is, you know, more than $1,000.
Yeah, and I know somebody also who took advantage of it, and she said that the paperwork was extensive. It took a long time to get all the details together that you needed to provide. You know, there was a lot of verification of your own personal data and things like that. It wasn't a simple application process.
Yeah, that's a long-standing problem in Thailand in general. It's just they kind of bury you in paperwork and in a lot of different ways for a lot of different processes.
So let's talk about Thailand and its current kind of COVID situation. So last year it had this reputation as being a country that had really handled it. And till a few months ago, really, people still had that impression. But now cases are still pretty high. Don't really seem to be going down significantly from kind of an outsider point of view. So what do you think went wrong?
I mean, the situation is definitely worse over the last couple of months than it's been for the whole pandemic here. You know, the last couple of weeks have been averaging around 3,000 cases per day. It has been getting better in the province, most of the provinces outside of Bangkok, but Bangkok, Metro Bangkok, the whole metro area is really the center of it now, and does not seem to be getting better here. In terms of what went wrong, I think it's easy to say that, you know, the society got complacent, and I think there's definitely you know, some truth to that. I think back on last year, you know, Thailand was pretty much COVID-free for about 6 months, if not a little more. I remember taking like a Twitter poll. Somebody had asked at that point, you know, maybe like October of last year, if Thailand would, you know, have more serious outbreaks, or if it would only be, you know, isolated, you know, cases of COVID, or, you know, completely COVID free. And I think I put that it would only be isolated cases. I didn't think that, that there would be a big outbreak like this that would happen. I mean, I think you kind of get used to that it's, you're in a COVID-free country, and it's easy to kind of let your guard down. But at the same time, I mean, I don't think that the complacency alone is what caused these outbreaks. I mean, I think you really have to blame some of the longstanding problems in Thailand, you know, namely corruption and like impunity for the rich and powerful, where they don't really have to follow the same laws. The first real outbreak was started in late December last year. That was started in Samut Sakhon, a province just southwest of Bangkok. That was thought to have started due to illegal immigration. Well, illegal immigration, you know, on the scale that it happens in Thailand, is really human trafficking that, you know, it doesn't happen just sort of like people running across, you know, rivers and that kind of thing. I mean, more recently, you know, the outbreak started at some of these real high-end nightclubs, and, you know, it sounds like they weren't really following all the, you know, COVID, you know, containment measures, social distancing, and that kind of thing. You know, I think you have to kind of blame these aspects of the society that kind of opened the door to the resurgence of COVID.
And I mean, of course, Thailand's not alone in isolation of having these resurgences. Vietnam is another good case, Cambodia as well. There are parallels between Vietnam and Thailand in the sense that domestic tourism in both countries was doing pretty well last year, as you mentioned, during that period when you felt COVID safe. But I guess the outbreaks have had a big impact on that.
Yeah, all three of Thailand's COVID waves have been terrible for domestic tourism. I mean, it's basically a shutdown that started back last year in April and May, and then again in January. And then more recently, I mean, I think it's something like 40 provinces in Thailand right now have domestic travel restrictions for people from, you know, provinces like Bangkok with a lot of cases where you have to get tested, or you have to be vaccinated, or you have to quarantine just to enter the province, you know. And Thailand has 77 provinces. So it's, you know, these are not large masses of land, you know, 77 provinces in a country as small as Thailand. And the rules vary by province, and it's really just kind of a minefield of, you know, restrictions, and it really makes it impossible to travel much. I mean, with that said, when you look at the whole pandemic, comparing the domestic tourism, I mean, Thailand really has two different tourism industries. You know, I mean, there's overlap, but there's really like the side of it that caters more to Thai tourists, domestic tourists, and then the side that is focused more on foreign tourists, you know, and there is overlap. But like, for example, we went to we took a trip up to Northeast Thailand, Isan, August 2020. And that's a region that traditionally doesn't get many foreign tourists. Most of the foreign tourists focus on Bangkok, Chiang Mai, and, you know, the islands in the south. They don't go up, you know, up unless they're like traveling to Laos or something like that. Most people don't go through Isan. So, you know, Thai tourists do go to Isan. At that point, we saw some hotels that were pretty much like full with domestic tourists. So, you know, they were doing fine, you know, and at the same time, places like Koh Samui, Phuket, you know, it was like something like 80-90% of hotels were closed completely, you know, and occupancy rates were just so low. So there's a big difference between those two sides. And, you know, the businesses that focus more on tourism, on foreign tourism, have really kind of been hung out to dry. They've gotten zero government aid for the whole pandemic. They didn't get any of the benefits from a domestic tourism stimulus program, the We Travel Together, it was called, that, you know, incentivized domestic travel through, you know, giving out, you know, discounts on hotels and flights and that kind of thing. So all the benefits from that program went to businesses that focus on domestic tourists. And those are really businesses that would not have had any, not too many problems. I mean, they would have received their share of domestic tourists anyway, given the fact that, you know, there wasn't much COVID at all in Thailand last year and everyone could travel. So, you know, at the same time, these businesses that focus on foreign tourism got nothing out of it and they got no government aid, you know, and here we are 16 months in and it's still the same situation. I think it was a really a flawed policy from the government, and it really showed kind of a misunderstanding of the entire tourism industry by the government. You know, they thought that incentivizing Thai people to travel would help all businesses and all destinations the same. And, you know, it's really not how it played out. And I mean, even things like, you know, loan forbearance for, you know, company, like for instance, transport companies that had like loans on, you know, tour buses that have been sitting empty and that kind of thing. They're still trying to get that now to take some of the pressure off. And they were supposed to have soft loans for some of these businesses, but those have largely been inaccessible. They're more or less like, you know, you need to qualify for it like it were any loan. You need to pay it back with interest. You know, to get the loan, you have to show proof of income or assets and that kind of thing, which is obviously difficult for these companies to meet right now. It's really been devastating. I mean, it's hard to think about, honestly. I know so many people who, you know, have just like beach bars and guest houses and, you know, small, my partner Chin runs a small tour company here in Bangkok doing food tours and cooking classes. And, you know, people like them have gotten nothing. And I mean, people are really struggling.
Yeah. I mean, and I think Gary and I have seen this as well in, you know, other countries. There's really been this fundamental misunderstanding, I think, by governments on what the tourism industry even was in those countries before, and but also how to support it. So you're talking about loans and how there's not been, you know, how it's very difficult for Thai businesses to take them. It's been the same here in Malaysia. It's the same in the Philippines, you know, where governments have rolled out these kind of stimulus packages. Actually, the take-up is incredibly low. One, because it's so difficult to apply. And two, just because the tourism businesses don't necessarily want to take on those loans right now because they've got zero clarity about how, you know, international borders are going to reopen. So talking about international borders, I don't think we can have you on and talk about Thailand without talking about the topic of the day, the week, the month, Phuket Sandbox. What's your analysis about how it's going to work? Is this going to be the game changer that we thought the special tourist visa was going to be?
I think it will have more of an impact than the special tourist visa did, certainly. There are a couple of ways of looking at it. You know, you can take a positive look at it and see it as, you know, maybe another one of those big steps, you know, towards getting back to normal. I mean, you have to start somewhere, right? With that said, there are a lot of risks. And first of all, it's not even finalized yet. And they're supposed to open July 1st. You know, I still think there's a chance that it won't happen July 1st. You know, a lot of people really have been saying, oh, it's definitely going to happen. It's definitely going to happen. But I really don't believe, you know, anything like that until it's actually published in the Royal Gazette and it's, you know, fully approved by the government, and that has not happened yet. And we were kind of expecting some approval this week, but that didn't happen. And it looks like the prime minister kind of wanted to take another look at it. And like you said, Gary, on Twitter yesterday, the TAT was, you know, saying that it might not be approved until the cabinet meeting on 20th, which would leave 10 days to, you know, finish all the preparation.
Well, I think there are some positive aspects to it, aren't there, Dave? This is an intention to, as you said, I think the most important part about this is this is really just the beginning of a reopening. It is going to be phased and graduated. And I guess that is probably the only way that tourism can look at it in the region right now.
Yeah, like I was saying before, you know, there are never easy answers. And I guess you have to put a toe in the water at some point. But still, I think it is rushed, though. I mean, I was really surprised, actually. I mean, because they first announced this back in March before Thailand had its third wave of COVID. At that point, in April when we, you know, started getting a lot of cases, I really thought that they would push back the July 1st start date, but they stuck with it. And, you know, I feel like it's kind of taken on a life of its own in a way. It's sort of like the TAT has really promoted it hard without getting the final approval from the government. And, you know, you have travel agencies and hotels taking bookings and that kind of thing. So it's almost like seems like there's no going back now, maybe. But I feel like it is rushed. And in terms of unanswered questions still now, I mean, we don't know which countries travelers will be eligible to come from. They say low to medium risk countries, but have not, you know, defined what that means in any way at all. We don't know if you'll be able to transit in Bangkok and how that will be possible, if you'll need to take like special flight or something like that. We don't know exactly what the testing requirements will be. TAT just came out with some new information a couple of days ago. And one of the things it said was that the types of vaccines that that are eligible for the program, that, you know, you have to be vaccinated, fully vaccinated to come to Thailand and do this program without, you know, going into quarantine. And it said, initially they said that it was, you know, any vaccine that's approved by the World Health Organization, but this most recent one said that it only vaccines approved by the Thai FDA, and they actually haven't approved that all that many vaccines. There are quite a few. There are some of the major vaccines, like the Pfizer biotech vaccine, has not yet been approved here. So, you know, there's a lot of questions, and I think it's a risky move. It could backfire. You know, it's essentially an experiment that kind of uses Phuket as a test subject, and well, Phuket itself and Thailand, especially Thailand at large, are not really as prepared as you would hope when starting something like this, I think. I mean, you know, one of the real big rules was vaccinate, you know, that they said before that they had to vaccinate 70% of people on Phuket. You know, that doesn't really look like it's going to be possible in time for July 1st. You know, they are getting closer to 70% now who have gotten the first shot. Just over 20% have both shots on Phuket. Most of the vaccinations there so far have been Sinovac, which is only 4 weeks between doses. So those will catch up pretty quick, but they're now also using AstraZeneca, and that's 16 weeks between shots. It's actually kind of telling. The governor of Phuket recently ruled that you only need one shot of AstraZeneca in order to enter Phuket as a domestic traveler. So it kind of shows that maybe they're thinking of, you know, one shot of AstraZeneca as being, you know, quote unquote vaccinated. It kind of seems like an example of ignoring the science, you know, in order to kind of fit something into your agenda or your policy.
In terms of that, David, in terms of the vaccination, Phuket has been prioritized. I mean, the rollout, the national rollout of Thailand's vaccination program has only happened quite recently. What's the sentiment in Thailand about Phuket, you know, getting this sort of priority status?
It's funny. I actually had a dream recently that Phuket was trying to secede from Thailand. So that kind of shows you how I look at it, maybe, you know, or subconsciously at least. You know, I mean, Phuket has always kind of existed in its own separate world to an extent from the rest of Thailand. Some Thai people have always kind of resented Phuket for decades, really, because they saw it as kind of being greedy and, you know, pricing out domestic travelers. So I think, you know, this whole plan has kind of crystallized some of those feelings that people already kind of had. But yeah, I mean, there are definitely people who are angry about the special treatment that Phuket is getting, you know, asking questions like, why should, you know, Phuket get prioritized over provinces that have, you know, worse COVID situations right now? And, you know, why should Phuket's tourism workers get prioritized over, you know, fresh market workers, for example? There have been a lot of COVID outbreaks in fresh markets all over the country. Some of these other groups maybe should be prioritized first in terms of keeping the pandemic at bay in general. TAT governor, I think, made a statement saying that, you know, they have to keep Phuket separate, you know, to instill confidence in tourists. I felt like that was kind of a bit insulting to the rest of the country. So I definitely think there's some, you know, resentment in the country towards Phuket because of this.
And do you think that domestic tourists are still going to be keen to visit Phuket once the Phuket Sandbox opens? Or are people going to be feeling a lot more hesitant? I mean, not only because now they have these restrictions, right? You've got to be vaccinated, but you've also got the potential of mingling around with international tourists. Are we going to see the Phuket take a hit on domestic tourism?
I'm not sure. I mean, the same goes with Samui. Domestic tourists, in terms of islands, tend to prefer Koh Chang and beach destinations like Hua Hin and Bang San. You know, Phuket is far away, you know, from Bangkok, which always kind of makes it a challenge for, you know, weekending domestic tourists and that kind of thing. And especially with the COVID situation in the country right now, they're really not getting domestic tourists much at all anyway right now. So it's actually kind of an interesting point that because of the domestic travel restrictions in the country right now, it almost kind of gives the Phuket authorities cover to limit domestic travel to the province so that they can try to keep COVID out, to keep these, you know, foreign tourists from being exposed to it or whatever. I mean, like for example, if there were only like really sporadic COVID outbreaks in the country, like 100 cases here or there, and you know, people were still allowed to travel without, you know, quarantining or being tested or anything like that, and then they said, okay, because we have, you know, foreign tourists coming in, everyone has to be vaccinated or tested to come to Phuket, I think that would kind of leave some Thai people up in arms, because it would be like, you know, you're taking away a freedom to travel. There's already so many restrictions, so it's kind of like people are already accepting of that. Phuket, they just recently announced the domestic travel restrictions, which I expect to stick for a while. And they say that if you're coming from anywhere in Thailand, which most provinces that have restrictions, it's only from, you know, red zone, dark red zone, places like Bangkok. But if you come from anywhere in Thailand, you need to be tested at least 7 days prior to entry, or you need to be vaccinated, or you need to quarantine. If you have to be tested to come into Phuket domestically just 7 days before you come in, then, you know, I think there's a real risk that people from outside Phuket will bring COVID into the province. If that happens, like even just like one or two cases, you know, slip in, and then if an outbreak starts in Phuket or vice versa, like if a domestic traveler goes into Phuket and catches COVID there and then goes back out and spreads it into the rest of the country, whether or not the infection, the transmission comes from a foreign tourist that's there for the sandbox program, you know, they'll be blamed. I mean, they'll blame you know, the general public will blame the program, you know, if either of those things happen. And I think that could doom the program in general down the road.
That's an interesting point, David, because as you mentioned, like Thailand has two kind of separate tourism industries, the domestic and the international. But in looking at the Phuket situation, there's kind of two elements to that as well. There's international travelers that will want to come in, fly and flop, have a beach vacation in Phuket, and then just go home. But there also, as you mentioned earlier on, there'll be probably a lot of people that want to come and use Phuket as a launch pad to spend more time traveling around Thailand. And that's where it gets very tricky, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, like I said, there's a lot of risks. I mean, it could backfire. So, you know, I think I'm really hoping for the best with it, and hoping that it doesn't go wrong. And because, you know, if it goes well, then, you know, and everything follows, and, you know, other destinations open, and, you know, it could be a first step towards, you know, a full reopening, you know, early next year. But if it goes bad and they have to cancel some of these other plans to open other destinations, then, you know, we could be looking at a much longer stretch before we even just really even start getting back to any kind of sense of normalcy.
And that's where it gets quite competitive. I mean, Phuket is sort of the frontline project for this, but other islands want to reopen as well. Samui is making moves as well. So, yeah. You know, that's where it could get tricky too, is that, you know, why Phuket? Why can't Samui open? Why can't, you know, other islands open up as well?
Yeah, the tourism leaders on Samui actually wanted to open July 1st. They have their own plan. It's called Safe and Sealed. It's a bit more restrictive. You'd have to be tied to like a single resort for the first 3 or 4 days, and then you get tested, and then you can go elsewhere on the island. And I think they're mostly like pretty high end resort properties too. And Chiang Mai also has been trying to push for, you know, to open earlier than October 1st. So, but I think neither of those will happen at least until August, if not more like September or October, which was what tourism minister has said kind of from the start, that it would be Phuket first and then all these other destinations October 1st. So I think they want to see how it goes on Phuket first.
And let's finish off then by talking about vaccines. So Thailand just started its mass vaccination drive on Monday on the 7th. How's that being received? You know, are people keen to get it? Are people skeptical about getting it?
Yeah, it seems to be going pretty well. I mean, the vaccination program here it got off to a really slow start. There was a lot of frustration with the government over the last several months. But it seems to be going pretty well. This week, they did 400,000, more than four, almost a million doses in the first 2 days this week, on Monday and Tuesday this week. Dipped a little bit yesterday, I think, down to like 370,000 or so. But the numbers are looking pretty good so far. You know, we'll see if they can keep it up. There is definitely some vaccine hesitancy here. I think a lot of it is more specifically surrounding the Sinovac vaccine. There have been quite a few reports of some pretty severe side effects in Thailand from that. Although I just a couple of days ago, a 46-year-old woman died after just like a couple hours, I think, after receiving the AstraZeneca vaccine. So that's not helping trust in that vaccine. But I think it's more, you know, people are worried about, like, Thai people in general. I mean, I think there's a lot of health consciousness here. And, you know, people know that some of the other vaccines have higher efficacy. And I think, you know, people would rather get some of the other vaccines. But, you know, there are plenty of people who are keen to get it, though. And I would say in general, the future looks pretty promising here vaccine wise. I mean, they've really picked up their efforts. The government has to allocate more vaccines after, you know, originally they're planning on really just relying on these AstraZeneca vaccines produced domestically by Siam Bioscience. I think yesterday they just signed a deal for 20 million Pfizer biotech doses, and they're working on a deal for Johnson & Johnson doses. They should be getting 5 million more Sinovac doses every month, and then private hospitals are supposed to be getting Moderna vaccine starting in October. Those would be for paying customers. It looks like they're well on their way to having plenty of vaccines for the whole country, certainly by the end of the year. And they're also working on their own vaccines here. They've got several kind of homegrown vaccines. I believe the only mRNA type vaccine that's currently being developed in Southeast Asia is being developed here at Chulalongkorn University in Bangkok. And that looks promising. The science journal Nature just recently did a profile on the head of the research institute that's behind that vaccine. If all goes well, they're already doing human trials of some of these vaccines, and hopefully mass production will start early next year. Try to take a long-term view of things, because I think at this time next year, for example, things will be looking a lot different, hopefully a lot brighter than they are now.
Absolutely, I think so, yeah. And it's good news then that they're ramping up vaccination this week. So David, before we wrap up, where can our listeners find you? Where can they subscribe to the Thai Island Times?
It's thaiislandtimes.substack.com is the newsletter. You can just do a search for Thai Island Times. You should find it. And I'm on Twitter at David Lukens. It's LUEKENS. You can find me there talking about islands and tourism reopening and all of this fun stuff.
Perfect. And I'll add the links to those in our show notes as well. So if you go on our website, you'll be able to find the links there. So David, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been really great to hear another perspective on what's going on in Thailand.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And thanks also for the work that both of you are doing. You know, it's for someone like me who's focused on Thailand, it's really helpful, invaluable, really, to, you know, to just in terms of putting it into a wider context of the whole region and what's going on. So I really appreciate your work.
Thank you. And that brings us to the end of today's show. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and don't forget to send us your thoughts and comments on what we discussed with David or what we missed out. You can drop us an email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or message us on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show or Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Yep. Meanwhile, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalogue on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, Castbox, Overcast, Podcast Addict, and Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each app. And please remember, if you do listen to us on Apple Podcasts, remember to rate and review us, as that helps other people to find the show.
So that's a wrap for today. And we look forward to talking more Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.